Now, it's around this time of year, we're usually here in Alice Springs, there's a conversation that crops up fairly regularly, particularly among those who maybe don't have family in town. If you're blessed to have immediate family in town, that's wonderful. But for most people, the question is, what are you doing for Christmas? Are you going home for Christmas? And of course, initially our gut response is, well, this is home, right? But at the same time, that question tends to linger. Because we think about home, or whatever home is, our family, or whatever we grew up in, or the place we grew up in. And to some extent, we feel like home should be the safest place to be. I mean, these are the people who know us and love us. But at the same time, I think we all have this awareness also that home is also the most complex of places. It should be a safe place, but it's this complex place, especially when you live here in Alice Springs. You know, you go home and you have to try and explain to people why you live in Alice Springs again. And you try to explain to them how this environment and the things that you're learning here are shaping you in a really profound way, and it's like they just don't get it. Or you have to explain why all the articles are always anti-Alice Springs and tell them what's really going on, the good things that are happening, even in spite of the challenges. Home can be a difficult place for people to truly listen and understand. And this story that we're going to encounter today with Jesus returning home to Nazareth is one of these stories. And there's something deeply encouraging, assuring, I suppose, about the fact that when we feel that tension inside of us of they just aren't getting this and they should, that Jesus gets that too. So I'm going to work through this text one more time, and I just want to allow it to kind of flow over you. As always, when we work through a text here at ASBC, I'm like, hey, what is God saying? And if God is pointing out something to you, then take note of that. Right? You can neglect what I have to say. If God has something to say, his voice is more important. But let's work through this text and let's see how Jesus experiences home. Jesus left that part of the country and returned with his disciples to Nazareth, his hometown. The next Sabbath, he began teaching in the synagogue, and many who heard him were amazed. They asked, "Where did he get all this wisdom and the power to perform such miracles?" Then they scoffed. Well, that was sudden. "He's just a carpenter, the son of Mary and the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon. And his sisters live right here among us." And they were deeply offended and refused to believe in him. Then Jesus told them, "A prophet is honored everywhere except in his own hometown and among his relatives and his own family." And because of their unbelief, he couldn't do any miracles among them except to place his hands on a few sick people and heal them. And he was amazed at their unbelief. Now, this story, when we think about our synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Matthew and Mark's version of this account are pretty much identical. Luke's going to take this a slightly different direction. Jesus is going to go back to his hometown and read a passage from the synagogue. They too are going to be amazed and then offended, and then they're going to try and take him to the side of a mountain and stone him. So a slightly different ending in the story of Luke. But we have to ask the question that arises from this text, which is, why is this here in a gospel? Like, how is this particular passage good news? And I must admit, I found this text actually quite hard to prepare for because I wanted it to be different. I wanted it to turn out differently for Jesus because prior to this point, he's got so much momentum in his ministry, right? Because prior to this, he's like raised a daughter from death. He's cast out demons from Legion, you know, across the other side of the lake. He's healed this bleeding woman who he declares to be daughter. Like, his ministry has all this momentum. And you're like, yeah, go Jesus. This is really good. And then suddenly you hit this story. And it's like there's this sudden stop. And you're like, I don't want it to be this way. And what's fascinating this question, why is this story included in the gospel, is fascinating when you think about the first century audience that would have been listening to this. You see, in a Roman or a Hellenistic, this kind of Greek-thinking perspective, that the gospel, this good news document, this subversive document is directed to, we see Jesus most often presented as this heroic figure, right? He's casting out demons. He's healing people. He's doing this incredible teaching. But there's something that's so beautiful and humanizing almost about this change of pace and about the way that Jesus is presented in this story that I believe that each of us really need to hear. Because we love the Jesus who's doing the amazing acts of power, and he still does. But also for those of us who are seeking to not only be recipients of this good news, but be messengers of this good news, there's something about being able to identify with the challenges of Jesus that we need to hear as well. Because to those who we might expect to have been open, in this case, Jesus in his hometown, this story teaches us that the messenger isn't always appreciated and does not always win them over. And that is something that we need to hear. That is, that those people that we expect to listen or expect to have been open, the messenger isn't always appreciated and doesn't always win them over. I mean, Jesus himself makes this declaration: a prophet is honored everywhere except in his own hometown and among his relatives and his own family. And I think this is fascinating because all the way through the gospel so far, Jesus has been referred to as teacher. And we've talked about that a lot. Teacher, teacher, teacher. He refers to himself as a teacher. Others refer to him as a teacher. And then Jesus, in this context, refers to himself as a prophet. Now, you might have a particular idea of what a prophet is. You might have some history attached to that. But simply, a prophet is someone who hears from God and shares his message. That's what a prophet does, right? So the prophetic, little pre-prophetic, is just I'm hearing from God and I'm sharing his message or speaking his truth. That is, a prophet is a messenger of truth, which is something we're all called to do. And so what I want us to consider today from the way that Jesus engaged is what it feels like to be the messenger that isn't received the way that we want. And so that's what we're going to focus on today. So let's just have a look at what happened. So Jesus goes to the synagogue on the Sabbath and he began teaching. And that's perfectly normal and reasonable. It's expected, especially in their hometown. And they asked, where did he get all this wisdom and the power to perform such miracles? And then they scoffed. He's just a carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, Simon, and his sisters live right here among us, and they were deeply offended and refused to believe in him. And we've got to ask the question, what can turn amazement into offense so quickly? It's like, it's so sudden. Like verse 2, they're all like, this is incredible. And then verse 3, they're like, then they start scoffing. And then they are deeply offended. And I think this is true, right? People can be so open to something and then so quickly closed to that thing. And what we see here in the text is that the people in his hometown, they suddenly had this movement beyond the truth of his words, which they identified as incredible, and beyond the power of his works, which they identified as incredible. And what they did is they brought in their history. They started to bring in their history with this messenger. They brought in their projections, their suspicions, their awareness of this messenger's associates, and they started to judge Jesus by these things. I think it's fascinating. Every time we read the PEV, or the PEV is next to our reading in the text, I always find it fascinating some of the terminology that they use. I love in the PEV, it says at the bottom after they list all these things that they're aware of, it says, his job here is to make things with wood. It's like, I have reduced everything, his words and his works, down to the fact that actually, you know what? Jesus' job here in town, in our place, is his job is to make wood. And so he has stepped beyond his scope. And so this full-on projection of assumptions has suddenly taken them from this amazement to offense. Some of you may have experienced, I don't know to what extent you've experienced this. I remember going back from my high school reunion several years ago. I think this is a fascinating case study on how we tend to put people into boxes. You know, you kind of go and you remember the stories of how students responded back when you were in year 11 or year 12, and you're like, that was the crazy one who climbed up onto the roof of the hall, and that was the super smart one, and that was the cool sporty one, and we had these boxes, right? And then we don't see people for a decade or two decades. And so we enter into this room and I'm like, I recognize your face and I've already decided who you are in my mind, and here is your opportunity to challenge that thought, right? And even though at our best moments we provide that opportunity, nevertheless, we can't help but see that person through the lens of our history, or maybe through the way that person hurt us, or maybe the suspicion around how they were born in the case of Jesus, right? And suddenly, it's almost like this filter goes over us, and no matter what they say, no matter how profound they are, no matter even maybe how kind they are, that history creeps in of the time they did that to me, and it acts as this shudder that we place down. We go from amazement to offense. And this is important for us to recognize as messengers of truth, as people who are seeking to be prophets, right? Hearing from God and speaking His truth. As a messenger of truth, you may find yourself defined by something less than you are. It's not a happy message. There's nothing happy really about this Jesus story except for a little bit at the end. But Jesus experienced that. He went into an environment where there was history and maybe there was pain and maybe there was suspicion, and suddenly he found himself defined by things that were less than he was. Isn't he just a carpenter? Isn't he the son of Mary? Haven't we seen his brothers? And you know what they get up to, right? And suddenly, it didn't matter what his words were or his works were. He was defined as something less than. And it's like being put into this box. And as a messenger, it is deeply frustrating. It actually really hurts us. And if you've experienced this, you know it to be true. Maybe you're trying to genuinely have a helpful conversation with even someone you would consider to be a friend. But it's almost like as you speak, it's like hitting a brick wall, because that friend has put you in a certain kind of box and you just simply cannot break through it. And you've got, I've got something so important for you to hear. And you've checked your own heart. You've checked your own heart and you're like, this isn't about me. This is genuinely like a prophetic thing. This is from God. They need to hear this. This is for their good. And at the same time, it just cannot penetrate that history. And while they may not use those terms, just are, that's what you're feeling. Apparently, I'm not what I expected to be. I'm more of a colleague, apparently, than a friend. I'm just the guy who delivers the water. I'm just the guy who does X, Y, Z. Even Jesus was not exempt from being put in a box. Isn't that incredible to think? Even Jesus was not exempt from this. And while he was doing these miraculous things, this was not something that he could simply say, yep, that doesn't occur to me. And that should provide us with some measure of encouragement. And the thing is, sometimes it's the people who know us best or know us most who are likely to do this, right? Because the people who know us, we have blind spots and lists of grievances and all these types of things. But before we kind of judge others for their rejection of our message, let's just ensure that we don't have a plank in our own eye, all right? Jesus talks about the speck and the plank. It's like, hey, don't take the speck out of your brother or sister's eyes without checking the plank in our own. Because we can do this too when it comes to messages directed our way. We can do this to any messenger. My question is there someone, a truth speaker, that maybe you have dismissed as a source of truth because they are just a fill in the gap? And you can't move past that particular thing. I like to joke with people, particularly in kind of Christian circles. I love a good heretic sale. And by that I mean, it used to be that you could go to like Christian bookstores And you'd have different authors, people who are writing incredible things, transformative things. Then they would ask one question or say something that was just a touch too controversial. And then all of their books would go into the heretic bin, right? And I used to think it was amazing because I'd go there and be like, oh, this person is incredible. $2 a book. Like, these books transformed my life. But because they said that one thing, right, suddenly I can't believe them anymore. They're just a person who said or asked this question. So we need to be very careful about this. And I'm not saying that we don't need to be discerning, of course, about what we read and what we hear. And I'm not saying that people who have positions of authority and who make mistakes are entitled to have those positions back. Of course, I'm not saying this. But at the same time, we need to be very careful that we, too, don't act exactly like the people in Nazareth and say, well, I know that person and they did this and therefore they are not entitled to speak truth anymore. I am closed to them. So sometimes we go to a place and no matter how good the message is and no matter how effectively you communicate it, your effectiveness will be limited because other people have chosen to put you in a box of some kind, to define you by something less than you are. You are just a child. You can't speak truth. And yet here at ASBC, we recognize the prophetic voice that our children can have into families. We trust in that. It's part of our missional approach. Are you just a child? Are you just my brother, my sister, my mother? My father? Are you just a former addict who wouldn't know? Are you just a youth pastor? Wait till you become lead pastor, then I'll listen to you. We'll do it, okay? And we need to be very careful. But Jesus gets it too. And while it may be painful and will have consequence, and we'll see this in the text, Jesus gets it. He stands there beside us as having experienced that reality. Let's have a look at what goes on. In verse 4 to 6, then Jesus told them, and he makes this declaration again, a prophet, a truth speaker from God, is honored everywhere except in his own hometown and among his relatives and his own family. And because of their unbelief, he couldn't do any miracles there. He couldn't, except to place his hands on a few sick people and heal them. And he was amazed at their unbelief. And so we need to recognize there's going to be times when this amazement shifts. They were amazed at his teaching, and then suddenly, by the end of this story, Jesus is amazed at their unbelief. There's no mistake that that word is used to bracket this particular story. People are going to be amazed. Maybe you're sharing something. They go, wow, you're going, this is going really well. I'm making progress on this conversation. I feel like this is helping this person. And then suddenly that amazement turns into offense, as people bring in their own agendas and fears and assumptions and perceptions. And suddenly that harvest field in our family or in our workplace or in our sporting club or in our network doesn't appear to be as fruitful as we hoped. And we ask this question, where did it all go wrong? And while this second point kind of really does just reinforce that first point, it's important, again, for us to stand as we stand beside Jesus and say, is this it? It's that as a messenger of truth, you are not immune from disappointing outcomes. Oh, man. As I was preparing this message, I'm like, yeah, come to church. This will be so motivating. You know what I mean? Like it's just, this is why it was hard to write, because there was this sense of kind of like, you know, people want to come to church and be pumped, and we're a missional church. I know people are engaging with people each and every day, bringing kingdom impact and extending the way of Jesus. Great. It's like, just come to Sunday and just, you know, hear some of this, right? But we need to hear this. There's going to be times when there are disappointing outcomes. And this is what Jesus himself declares. Jesus declares that there are going to be places where a message will not be received the way that he would like it to be received. And even he can't change that. Even Jesus couldn't change that. It says he was amazed at their lack of faith. You could say he was surprised at their lack of faith. But this is Jesus, we say. Yes. And yet this was still experienced. Jesus wanted to do things. He wanted to see transformation, especially close to home, no doubt. But there was this barrier. And what's fascinating is, and Ian will speak about this next week, this was just prior to Jesus sending out his own disciples into the mission field. Isn't that great? Like, it's like he's come off this like amazing acts of word and power, and he kind of like, okay, guys, you must be really pumped to be sent out now because, you know, it's going to be so good because you've seen how good it is. But just before you go out, let's go home because I'm sure that will be killer, right? And then he goes home and just has this such a disappointing situation, and yet he's still going to send them out because they, his disciples, needed to know both realities, the power of God at work and the power of his word, but also the reality that people can treat us as something less than and that we will experience disappointing outcomes at times. There is no guarantees. Some of us might be engaging in a spiritual conversation and it doesn't turn out the way that we hope. And we check our own heart and we make sure that we took the appropriate approach as best we knew how. And sometimes we just need to be reminded by Jesus that actually, you know what? Maybe it was just the wrong time, the wrong person. And it wasn't that that effort was insignificant, not at all. You were faithful, right? And you should be faithful. This isn't some excuse to be like, it's too hard, let's just do anything. But nevertheless, just because we are faithful with what we have does not guarantee that it will be received the way that we want. We, at times, like Jesus, will echo the prophets of old. Isaiah, Jeremiah. If you want to deeply engage with some people who had a true message but didn't experience the response that they wanted, head into the Old Testament. There's plenty of literature. And even Jonah, he was faithful and he didn't get the outcome he wanted, even if it was a great outcome. We reflect this and Jesus saw it too. So what do we do then? We can't just do nothing. We can't just be fearful and be like, oh, well, I won't step in. That's why, again, just want to look at how Jesus responds. It says here in verse 5, because of their unbelief, he couldn't do any miracles among them. I love this detail. Except to place his hands on a few sick people and heal them. That'd be lovely. That's just a lovely touch. He couldn't do many miracles there, but he could lay his hands on a few people. Oh, he could still heal them. Isn't that nice? And I just love this little detail because what it tells me is Jesus works with what he's got. Even amongst the amazement that turns into offense, right? Apparently, there were still some people of faith. And so even with this hostility and these barriers and being put in boxes and being disappointed, Jesus still found the few where he could place his hands on them and bring healing power. He was able to do this even if it wasn't to the scale that he desired. And so we work with what we have. We work with what we have. That's what Jesus did. We do what we can. We, as his followers, as his prophets, as his disciples, are faithful with what we have, even in response to a lack of faith. Because as a messenger of truth, we may find ourselves defined by something less than we are. And we are not immune from disappointing outcomes. So we imitate Jesus by finding the few. We find those little places, perhaps, where the truth will still resonate. Those conversations where there is an openness, a desire for prayer. Those few people who maybe don't carry that baggage or that history. And I'm convinced that whether it be going home for Christmas or within your work environment or within your friendship circles, as followers of Jesus here in Alice Springs and wherever you're joining us from online, like we have these spaces to which God is calling us to be a prophetic voice. That call isn't going anywhere. But sometimes the outcome that we're going to get is just a little. the one person instead of the 100. That one line of truth instead of the 20 things we would like to share. And that's okay, because Jesus gets it too. So let's just take a moment now to consider the spaces in our world where maybe we are called to be a truth speaker. When I say a truth speaker, I'm saying, hey, God has something for this person that is in their best interests, and I'm going to deliver it with love and compassion, with profound word and maybe even acts of power, like Jesus. Like, where is that space for you? I encourage you just to bring that to mind now. And once that thing has come to mind, I actually want you to consider the times when maybe you, like Jesus, were disappointed that that truth wasn't received so well. Because I just feel like maybe we just need to do some work there for a moment. And if you feel like you were faithful in that situation and yet you didn't get the response that maybe you desired, or maybe you felt like you got put into a box, I just want you to hear those words of Jesus. It's essentially the words, yeah, me too, I get that. And if you feel like you need it, I just want to just extend that grace and that permission to recognize that in that moment you were faithful. Just to let go of any bitterness, any kind of shame, any kind of regret that is associated with that. As we consider those spaces, allow me just to pray a simple prayer. God, we desire to imitate Jesus in being your prophets. There are people in our families, in our workplaces, that are trapped, bound by so much fear, heartache, unforgiveness. And God, we know you want to set them free. And so God, may we be faithful in those places. We check our own hearts to ensure we're not placing others in boxes. We prepare our hearts to be faithful to whatever measure our context allows. I want to pray especially for people who right now feel like they are facing significant resistance in being a truth speaker. Perhaps it feels like people are shouting over them or defining them by something less than they are. And so, God, we pray this in faith. Even in those contexts, may each of us reach out with our hands and find those few people that we can heal. Heal with our words, heal through your power. May we find a few. And in doing so, imitate you, our God, creator of all things, sustainer of all things. For your good news is good. We trust you. Amen.